All right, a couple things here before we get into 100 men versus a gorilla.
You guys have angered Sean and gotten him ready for this bout versus the gorilla.
Well, yeah, add me to the 100 men after reading. Well, it's the tone of text that people correct you with when they're incorrect. Yeah. The first one, Pendergrass, curious of the emphasis on the ock in Kalen Bullock. That's how he pronounces his name. I don't know what you're implying, sir.
What are you so curious about? Right. All of us had to be corrected because we were pronouncing it Kalen Bullock.
Bullock.
And it's, no, he likes it pronounced
it's
Bullock.
Pronounced Bullock. So if it's
so curious. I don't know what you're curious about, buddy.
Right. If it's curious that I'm pronouncing his name correctly, then I apologize. Multiple of you pointing out to me when I said that Jen Sturger was initially made famous by Brent Musburger noticing her on a broadcast. Have gone out of your way. I'll read one example. No, Sean. Musburger pointed out AJ McCarron's girlfriend, now wife. It was not Jen Sturger. Sir or ma'am, and the rest of you who are pointing out that it was Catherine Webb, that's AJ McCarron's wife's name. I'm assuming it's Catherine McCarron now, possibly. It was Catherine Webb, not Jen Sturger. I will point out to you that Brent Musburger, A, really likes pretty women. B, has done thousands of college football games, not just the national championship game in 2012 that involved Catherine Webb. He did point out Jen Sturger. It is possible for Brent Musburger to point out more than one pretty woman over the several decades that he's done college football. So I don't mind correcting you. It's the no, Sean, wagging your finger on the text.
Feel like if I said to somebody, hey, you know, Sean really likes Raisin Bran. And they're like, ha, 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 ha. No, Seth, Sean likes Cheerios. Oh, silly Seth.
Do you have more than one cereal in the holster, okay?
It's weird that more than one thing can be true in so many different aspects
of life. Yeah, yes. Brent Musburger is a bit of a perv. Like, he is pointed out.
I think he's probably, I'm not going to sit here and stand for all of you guys acting like he can't sound like a creepy old man versus multiple different women.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. Now, I will say this. The Bullock texter, I replied to him and said, that's how he pronounces it. And I signed Sean to the text. He liked that text. So he may have liked it before I tried to make an example out of him. So he may unlike it, but who knows?
Musburger did both of those.
Both of them. Yes.
As soon as you said it, I anticipated all this.
You knew that was coming.
And I did nothing to stop it.
That's okay.
I didn't want to, it would basically be me correcting a well actually preemptively, which would be me being a well actually guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's all good.
And yeah, here we are.
It's all good.
Talking about it.
Yeah. So this gorilla versus 100 men, this was really funny yesterday. JP Hovey, who does digital content for the Bussin' with the Boys guys, Will Compton and Taylor Lewandt, very successful podcast, put together his list of 100 humans that he would gather to try and fight and beat up a gorilla. This has been making the... And this is where one of the greatest uses of AI have been some of the videos that have come out with this, of a gorilla actually fighting 100 people. It's been pretty fun.
I think the biggest thing I've learned is that people underestimate what a mass of humanity or any kind of mammal can actually do.
Yes.
I don't give the gorilla a chance as long as you've got to be willing to die. Are those people, if it's a situation where, all right, the human race hangs in the balance and you chosen 100 have to fight this gorilla, it would be no contest. The humans would win.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of how many humans would die in doing
it. That's right. Yeah, you're basically soldiers at that point.
Yeah. Me versus one tiny piranha, no big deal.
Right.
Me versus hundreds of piranha, I'm hosed.
Right. So the tail of the tape here, a silverback gorilla can lift up to 800 kilograms, run 25 miles per hour, and has a bite force of 1,300 PSI, which means that he can basically just break your bones with his mouth if he wants to.
Yeah.
And with a swing of his arm, can instantly kill a man with the force that he can hit with.
Oh, yeah.
With his arm.
They're incredibly... It's ridiculous how strong they are.
Now,
how built for football they are.
Yeah.
Their skulls... You know, you look at a skeleton of a gorilla, and it looks a lot like that AI thing they did a few years ago.
Yes.
Of, like, the ideal... a person that would actually be built to play American football.
Right.
Like, with like a ridiculously thick skull.
Thick cranium.
And wide, massive bones and
everything.
Massive
bones, big shoulders. Good catch radius with the long arms.
Yes.
Now, the opposable thumbs would be... that would be, you know, you need those. I don't know that, you know, that might be an issue.
Gorillas do have opposable thumbs.
They do? Okay, good. Okay. There you go.
That's one of the great things about us apes. Yeah.
Yeah. These are the people with Houston ties that were part of the magical 100 that J.P. Hovey put together. There's 10 of them that have some Houston ties. The Undertaker, who is from Houston. He said the Undertaker would be the last person in. That would be the person to finish everything off. Steven Adams. Steven Adams would be part of this 100 people. This series has gotten very chippy. Yeah. And I feel like Steven Adams has been part of chippy things before, like this season where, remember, he got dragged to the ground by somebody in a game and it was, he kind of was cool about it. In his post-game press conferences in this series with the Warriors, he's been very diplomatic. I'm hoping that somewhere in there's a trigger for Steven Adams where especially knowing it's Draymond on the other side, you know?
It still feels a little bit, though, like Steven Adams might try to talk sense into the gorilla beforehand.
Yeah.
That's where it would be immediately like, oh, come on, mate. And then, gorilla hand to the side of the face.
Right. Ron Artest, former Rocket.
100%.
Rocket. Yeah, yeah. But the author of The Malice in the Palace. When I say author, one of the guys who triggered The Malice in the Palace back 20 years ago.
Yeah.
That's true. That guy lobbed a drink onto him. He definitely should have run into the crowd and started a melee.
And hit the wrong guy.
Yeah. this was interesting. DJ Swearinger made the list.
Out of nowhere. Yeah. That was an impressive pull.
Yes.
Now DJ has played for like 10 different teams, so I'm guessing
he's been in one of the spring leagues. He's been in like the UFL, I think.
So I'm guessing Hovey here just has a fond memory of DJ Swearinger. Just go. Now, a lot of these guys so far are a little bit of, especially with Artest, with Ron Artest and DJ Swearinger. Those two guys especially are like, okay, we could trigger them in such a way that they would forget about their personal safety or anything. They would just want to go after the gorilla no matter what.
This isn't one with Houston ties, other than I think the Texans would love to have had him on the team. He has Tyler Booker in his Tyler Booker. Do you think he could make the gorilla? He could suck the love out of the gorilla loving to fight like he says he does. Other opposing defensive linemen on Saturdays for Alabama.
Right, yeah, he wanted to take away their joy of football.
Yeah. Yeah. Could he do that to a gorilla?
Sucking the love out of the gorilla would be one way to pacify him a little bit beforehand. I think that, Tyler Booker is the body type you're going for. Just a big, just a thick, massive dude.
You
really need Matt.
You don't need a lot of speed.
My strategy is to dogpile the gorilla and suffocate him.
Right.
You're just, which means that you want as much heft as possible.
Yeah.
And yes, 10 or 20 or 30 people are going to die while you do that, but just suffocate the gorilla.
Yeah. There's people adding people to the list we'll get to on the Jim. I'll read this one. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Someone added Jim Adler to the list of 100 people. the Texas Hammer. Yes.
The other, Andre Johnson, he is disallowed. He's too valuable to humanity.
Yeah.
So if these hundred brave souls have to fight the gorilla to try to save all of mankind, you need Andre Johnson around afterwards.
Andre Johnson in Courtland Finnegan mode was on the list. There's four more, all either former or current Houston Texans. Jadeveon Clowney,
According to the internet, you only need him for one play.
One play,
just have him be the first guy
if
out.
If the gorilla has a helmet on, he can knock the helmet off of the gorilla. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Vince Wilfork.
Mass. You think?
Yeah, mass.
Well, except he's not big anymore.
No, I don't think.
Bunch of weight.
Yeah, I don't think that. I don't think that Hovey knows that. J.P. Hovey knows that Vince Wilfork is much more slender. Brian Cushing.
I want to keep Vince Wilfork around to barbecue the gorilla after we kill it.
Yeah, he's the celebratory, the celebration afterwards.
I want that gorilla on a spit.
Yep. Brian Cushing.
Oh, that's a good one, too. Anger and aggression and just, hey, if you want to go primal on a primate, Brian Cushing is your guy.
And finally, athletes or people with Houston ties, Aziz Alshire.
100%. 100%. Yep. The gorilla would be whining about how he was trying to slide or something. And like, and looking for the officials. Meanwhile, Aziz is just going ham on him.
If you got a personal foul as a Texan in a game against the Jacksonville Jaguars in the last 10 years, you're on this list. DJ Swearinger and Aziz Alshire. There you go. Among the random people that made me laugh in this particular post, J.P. Hovey says one of the 100 people would be a random psycho defensive coordinator / history teacher from high school.
Oh.
Kind of the stereotypical, you know, the
Yeah.
The hardcore football coach that teaches history on the side.
That definitely goes to his personal experience.
Yeah.
I don't think any of my... Is a history coach a standard football coach spot?
I think he's just bringing up your random high school subject. Yeah.
If you're going to go an NFL coach, it would be like 31 of the 32 NFL special teams.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Brant Boyer, my friend who's the coordinator for the 49ers, would be awesome versus a gorilla.
Would he? Okay.
Yeah. He's got a deep, deep hatred with it.
How do you think Frank Ross would do against the gorilla?
Oh, great. Yeah. He'd have a different style than Brant. Like he'd be a lot more sticking and moving, I think, and just trying to confuse the gorilla and tiring him out.
Yeah. Shane Gillis, comedic relief. He just wants Shane Gillis out there in the field making everybody laugh just to keep the spirits up. Yeah.
Well, one of Shane Gillis's go-to things is kind of like it looks kind of like a stupid monkey just kind of shrugging.
Yeah.
Like he just goes like, like he could stand in front of the gorilla and mock him.
Yes.
And distract him while everybody attacked from the flanks.
Along those lines, there's eight people that J.P. Hovey uses as bait, I guess, to try to distract the gorilla. Kris Jenner. Mm-hmm.
Jenner could dangle a social media contract.
Yeah,
they'd be like, okay, I'm going to take you in and I'm going to make you a star.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, most of these, the rest of them seem to be people that J.P. Hovey just wants dead. The person who bullied him in elementary school, Jared from Subway.
Oh, yeah.
Kim Jong.
I thought he was dead already.
No, I think he's in prison.
He didn't get killed in prison? Every time we bring up somebody like him... Or the
Sandusky.
Sandusky.
Yeah.
And I Google, I'm like, surely that guy got killed.
I'm the same way, dude. Yeah. Kim Jong-un and Putin. And then he said, please don't read this, sir. And then along the lines of what you're saying, Diddy, Harvey Weinstein, and R. Kelly. He's got on the list of people they'd use as bait for the gorilla. Okay. Text messages coming in on this topic. Why is everyone attacking a gorilla? I hope he shreds everyone. Everybody die.
Humanity hangs in the balance, okay?
Yeah. Yep.
This is us versus them. Don't act like if a gorilla had the same mental faculties that we do, that they wouldn't have killed us all already.
Right.
You know, like, let's not pretend here,
yes,
all right?
Yes,
yes. Don't, yes, protect the species all you must. But for when it comes to one individual SOB piece of crap gorilla that deserves to die, I'm all for killing him.
Right.
He deserves it, and you got to do it. Okay.
You're passionate about this. You're going to like this one. 100 Seth Paynes on meth versus a gorilla.
So 100 Seth Paynes is, yes. Yes, redundant. 100%.
You listen to this show, right? Oh, that's funny.
It was, 100. And then somebody feeds me bulletin board material from the gorilla.
Yeah.
Like some bogus bulletin board material.
Yes.
He said that all you do, you're only good at defensive holding and nothing else. And is that right? Is that right?
Someone says, I'm cracking up. Sean's capable of pulling dates from decades ago, date, time, and location, but simple things like gorillas having opposable thumbs eludes him. He's the ABCs of me, baby.
This was one of the ones where just with gorillas in baseball, I actually fact check myself after I've corrected you because I'm like, all right, I'm pretty sure I'm right here, but Sean's smarter than me, so I did Google
that.
After I told you that primates have opposable thumbs.
Yeah,
I had to Google it and
they
confirm
do.
It.
I've always thought they didn't for some reason. I don't know why.
Think about any other things you've seen of either gorillas or monkeys when they're sticking a little stick into a maggots out of a plant or whatever.
And let's be honest, it's awful hard to pleasure yourself if you can't move your thumb.
What's held all the other species?
That's what I'm saying. That's what they do in the zoo all the time. They're over there taking care of business. Prime time. Did
you know this from personal experience? That time that
broke my thumb. That one
shark
time
broke both your thumbs.
It's the worst part about being a gambler. The worst part about being a degenerate gambler is there's big swaths of the year where you can't pleasure yourself. All right.
Yeah.
Prime time. Detroit and Dominican Sue. Would you send primetime Detroit and Dom? I don't know, man. And Dominican Sue, it's one thing. No, I'm going to say no on this one. And Dominican Sue was a dirty player. I don't know how tough he was. Stomping on guys' arms, kicking guys in the nards. He'll get eaten up in 2 seconds by the gorilla. There's no cheap shots he can administer there.
Yeah, but again, though, too, this is no holds barred. So the kick to the groin, you got to go for it.
I guess.
So I think Draymond and Ndamukong Suh might be your best bets there.
Yeah.
Like, hey, And Dominican, you try to go after hitting him in the head with your spikes on, and Draymond will take care of the nargs. Average penis member, by the way, his dangler there, is 1.1 inches on average.
Yeah. For a gorilla.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As you can see, clearly they're compensating for things. That's
why
they're so damn angry so much
right.
of the time.
That's how I would start the fight.
Driving around in a $500,000 convertible, all that. Yeah.
That's how I would start the fight. If the gorilla were being a little too docile and not engaged, I'd be like, you're hung like a grasshopper, okay, bro? All right? Let's see what he does. Brian Brayman, someone is saying on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Brian Brayman doesn't mind playing without a helmet. Former Texan special teamer.
That's where cushion comes in, too. You want to be sure you can got guys that'll play through the being
head
bloodied.
Trauma. Yeah.
You want guys that it doesn't matter. They go, like in a movie, the guy that gets shot 20 times and he's still coming at you. Yeah.
Multiple people saying Booker T. Booker T might be a little too nice to be in this thing. And I don't want Booker T to die either. I love Booker T.
Well, and he's, I guess, current age Booker T versus 22-year-old Booker
still
T.
Still in really good shape, though, man. Like, Booker's...
Still in really good shape, but it's not quite the same as, you know...
As in his prime Booker T, no doubt. Yeah, no doubt about that. Got to get J.J. Watt in there. All right, where do you fall on J.J. Watt being in this gorilla versus men fight? How do you think he'd do it?
Yeah, no, I think that would be a good one again, especially because the bat... You know, combined the mass... J.J. would have to bulk up before.
Yeah.
Now, J.J. says he's not that much lighter than his actual playing weight.
Right.
He's just kind of changed his workouts up so he's not so massive in the neck and all that. Yeah, I think J.J., but give him 3 weeks to start taking creatine again and get on a high-carb diet. Just really blow it up and get as much mass as possible.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at this text. Mahomes will... Mahomes will zesty walk to distract the gorilla.
Arr, Michael!
Gorilla! Yoo-hoo, gorilla!
Look, I'm injured. I'm the weak one.
I'm him. Who has two thumbs in his ham? This guy over here, zesty walking gorilla. Oh, my God.
His zesty injured ankle walk is the best zesty.
Oh, it's the best. Last one. We'll read some of them in the next segment. They're rolling in. The last one, put Sean Bajani in there. He already thinks he can take out Seth. You're in, Bajani.
Bajani's up at the front being like, what are these 99 guys here for?
Yeah.
I just said, what the hell? This is guys. This is frankly, we didn't plan for this at the victory buffet. We don't have enough plates for this. Get rid of half these guys at least.
Bajani goes to the DMV, and when you got to fill out height and weight, he puts 6'9", 286. Oh, we love you, Sean Bajani. Just so you know. All right, Payne and Pendergast, keep texting in. These are very funny. People you would put, especially Houstonians, in the battle of 100 men versus one gorilla. All right, the power rankings are out. Jonathan Alexander, I will see your way too early 53-man roster and raise you a post-NFL draft power ranking of the power rankings. How do the experts view the Texans following the NFL draft? That is next. It's really interesting. The the people that they want to throw into the 100 men versus one gorilla thing.
Yeah.
Most of it are serious answers of people who they think would stand a chance. And then I would say that's like 85%. And the other 15% are people they just hate that they want to throw in to get their faces ripped off by the gorilla.
Right. Those are the people that go in first.
Yes.
The ones that soften them up a little bit.
Yes.
The other option, too, I think, is if you go opposite of where most people go, is where they're pointing out people with a lot of size and strength. I would say a collection of horse jockeys and male gymnasts.
Yeah.
Just jump on his back and try to tire him out. And bull riders.
Yes.
Who also tend to be smaller, strong strength to weight ratio type guys.
There you go. We'll read some more of your texts in just a second. So after the draft, how are the experts feeling about the Texans? Have they made any significant headway in how the experts feel about them? Power ranking of the power rankings post-draft. We'll start with NFL.com and Eric Edholm. I've got four power rankings here, Seth. I've got NFL.com, I've got Yahoo, I've got The Athletic, and I've got, who's the fourth one that I've got here? I've got Bleacher Report. So those are the four that I was able to find. Eric Edholm, you are ranked 4th out of 4. Why? You have the Texans all the way down at 14, sir. We will not tolerate this. We will not stand for this. We will not stand for this. Here's what he says. The Texans struggled to take the proverbial next step last season as the O-line and receiver groups crumbled. They've laser-pointed those two areas of the roster this offseason, with the draft being an extension of that. I've nitpicked a few selections, Woody Marks, Graham Mertz, he says, but and Eric Edholm, by the way, is a draft guy. Like, he is a big draft guy. The overall approach came from a logical place. Now it's just a matter of sorting out the pecking order at those positions and determining if Houston has enough firepower defensively, okay, to hang with the big boys of the league. That was me adding the question mark there. The pressure is simmering again on C.J. Stroud and D'Amico Ryans to bring this team back to the lofty expectations we had a year ago, and I think they can handle it. Yet he's got him at 14.
Well, it's interesting that he would question the defensive firepower specifically, to use that phrase, because, like, by and large, the actual big play ability, the Texans have loads of that.
Yes.
They've got two excellent edge rushers. They in the secondary, they pick the ball off a lot. They were second in the league in interceptions last year. It's more that defense. The one biggest thing that they're really missing is the number of big plays that they allow.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they were bad last year. You know, it's hard too when the offense isn't helping you out, but a lot of the deep shots and some of the missed tackles were more of an issue than anything. But they've got plenty of firepower. They've
yes.
got plenty of big play ability. This is what I've realized too in the offseason as I've thought about things is, the offense last year was much worse than we expected or they should have been. The passing attack did not get going based on what you saw in the preseason. And we knew that before two of the starting three wide receivers got injured. But that's for 2 years in a row now, the Texans have been eliminated in the playoffs with just Nico Collins and not much else in the receiver
corps.
Right. That they've been very undermanned. And just if your two draft picks can deliver and if Christian Kirk can stay healthy, that alone makes you a much better team in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because it's, you know, if you start saying, well, look, they're banged up with the receivers against Chiefs, it's not a completely valid excuse because they weren't a good offense when they had all their healthy wide receivers, but it makes it that much harder. So that's the wide receivers are one of the big missing things from both these last postseasons.
Yep, agreed. The third on the power ranking of the power rankings out of four would be Bleacher Report. And the analyst's name is Gary Davenport. Gary, I've never heard of you before, but you have the Texans at 10th. And therefore, sir, I respect you. I'll take anything in the top 10. Here is the analyst's take on the Houston Texans. A reset became necessary in Houston after the Texans and C.J. Stroud took a slight step back in 2024. Stephon Diggs and Laremy Tunsil are gone. The Texans brought in veterans Cam Robinson, Laken Tomlinson, and Trent Brown to solidify the O-line. Meanwhile, the day two draft additions of Jaden Higgins and Jaden Noll reshaped the team's wide receiver room around Nico Collins. This fall, Houston should look more like the team in 2023 than they did in 2024. Do you think this offense looks more like the 2012? I don't know that it looks like either of them if Nick Cayley's vision is, you know, we don't know what it's going to look like.
Well, and again, the Texans' offense in 2023 wasn't actually a genuinely good offense.
Correct.
It was a very promising offense. And, yeah, frankly, they need to look better than 2023, but look more like the 2023 offense, which was better than the 2024 offense.
Yep.
The really uncomfortable thing about all of this is a lot of it just does hinge on whether Nick Cayley is definitively a better offensive coordinator than Bobby Slowick.
Yep.
And we don't get the answer to that until September and October of next year.
So week one, that's
a frustrating and tough part about any of this is that we just don't know until we see what we have in Nick Cayley.
It is. I choose to exercise blind faith and just maintain a good mood throughout training camp. That's going to be my hope.
Yeah. Well, no, and it's not that uncomfortable for me, but it's uncomfortable when people ask me to give my assessment of, okay, how much better has the offense gotten? And I just have to say that thing, which has been scientifically proven that men hate to say, I don't know.
Right.
Which, hey, ladies in the audience, by the way, here's a tip for you. There are studies that show that men really just hate saying, I don't know. That's why we end up mansplaining things that we don't know anything about. So if you ask your man a question and he says I don't know, just leave it alone.
Yeah, man.
Because it takes effort for him to say I don't know. So then if you just ask the question again, expecting some different response.
Yeah.
You're just opening the door to him either getting angry or making something up completely.
That's right.
It's the second question after he's already admitted that he doesn't know.
Yes.
Or he's asked for directions or whatever it might be. Don't put him in that situation of having to say it again.
Him saying, I don't know, is him doing his best in a weird way. Like he's doing his best. By saying, I don't know. It could be worse. He could be mansplaining. You're exactly right.
So every time somebody asks me that question, I'm like, I said, I don't know.
I don't know
if Nick Haley's any good or not. I hope he is.
That's right. Well, you got five more months of it coming up. Be ready, buddy. Number two, power ranking of the power rankings, The Athletic and Josh Kendall, who also has the Texans 10th. He's second. Why is he second and Bleacher Report third? I find the Athletic font that they use to be much more friendly on the eyes than the font that the Bleacher Report uses. Here's what he says about the Texans. Houston wins the weirdest weekend award after not only selecting two receivers from Iowa State in its first three picks, but also drafting two Jalens. Two Jalens with an I, one Jalen with an E, and one Jaden. With the additions of pass catchers Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel, Houston likely is signaling that it doesn't expect Tank Dell to return from injury this season. The Texans also drafted mammoth Minnesota offensive tackle Ariante Ursary in the second round. So there you go. Pretty basic analysis there. And he's the first one to point out that they drafted way too many names that are going to confuse people, especially you.
The Athletic has so many good articles, and it's by far, I think, one of my best bang for the buck of anything I buy.
Easily, yes.
Like, I spend more time on The Athletic than I do on Netflix, probably, and I pay less per month.
Right.
And yet, the problem is, whenever I try to show some love to one of The Athletic writers, because they're owned by the New York Times, it comes up as a link to the New York Times, and immediately it becomes political in the replies.
Yeah.
Like, listen, they're largely, as far as I know, they're just still a sports website who happens to be owned by the New York Times.
That's
so, however
right.
you feel about the New York Times, I'm not trying to force my political takes down your throat.
It's
a good sports article, damn it.
Yeah, it is. It is. Last one, the winner, the number one ranked outlet for the power ranking of the post draft power rankings, Yahoo, and their analyst Steve Serby, who has the Texans eighth in the not tenth. Inside of the top 10. Inside 10. Yeah. Give it to me two more times, Jalen. Let's do it. Yes. Eighth. Here's what he says. Short and sweet. CJ Stroud and Nico Collins welcome Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel with Stephon Diggs in New England and Tank Dell rehabbing. But will the offensive line cooperate? Dun, dun, dun. That is the big question.
Cooperating amongst themselves, the offensive line. That's the big key. No more of this guys being on different pages or in different universes on any given play. Yes.
You know who the power rankers are not impressed with thus far, at least the draft? The Magnificent Gladstone. In the four outlets I just outlined, the Jags are 29th, 25th, 30th, and 24th. Good for you four power rankers to not be snowed under by all the big words that the Magnificent Gladstone, the Maggie G, is dropping on all of you.
They're not even big words. They're annoying words.
Yes,
they're buzzwords. It's not like you got to go to a dictionary. This is on my Gladstone glossary so far. Modes of operation.
Yep.
Singular touch points.
Yep.
Intangibly rich.
Mm-hmm.
Sourced intel.
Mm-hmm.
Deploying mechanisms.
Okay.
And be a fighter, not a fencer. And we're adding to it.
Oh, yes, we
every
are.
Day.
Yes, we are. That thing's not going anywhere. People that they would add, people that our texters, our listeners would add to the 100 men versus one gorilla fight. 100 Mike Tysons on coke. Okay. Mm-hmm. Someone said,
well, that's just listen.
Tyson is on the list, I think, that Javi
had. Can we keep this conversation serious, though? Like, you're leaving the realms of reality when you say 100 Mike Tysons.
Yeah, that's true.
We don't lack the technology or at least the willingness to go beyond ethics to clone human beings yet, okay?
Yes.
So it's just, let's be realistic here in our discussion about 100 human beings fighting a gorilla.
A couple people said Brock Lesnar. He was on the list that JP Hovey put together. Mad Max, Vernon Maxwell is getting some love on here. Yes. Now, maybe Vernon in his prime, although Vernon still looks like he's in pretty good shape. He's not put on.
Cut him up on Twitter real good.
Yeah.
That's what he would do.
He is good on Twitter.
You have to have Vernon Maxwell live tweet it.
Yes.
That's how you get that. That's how you get the gorilla.
Yes.
You get him, hopefully the gorilla reads his mentions.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Get into his head a little bit with some Vernon Maxwell.
Someone's asking if Mark Gastineau is the producer of the Brett Favre documentary. That was an uncomfortable interaction for sure. All right. Keep sending in your men versus gorilla takes on there. I do wonder this. There was one quarterback not named Shedeur Sanders who slipped in this draft. I wonder if his journey, if his saga over the weekend changes the way that college quarterbacks approach the declaration of going to the NFL. We will discuss that coming up next. All right, I have a question. Does Quinn Ewers sliding to the 7th round of the NFL draft, where he had a year of eligibility left, could have gone anywhere, could have made a nice NIL bag, reports where he was getting that $4 million offer, possibly, or was up for it, that Carson Beck's getting $4 million, Quinn Ewers, who got UT to the college football playoff twice, would certainly be in line to get $4 million. Would he have been better served transferring, doing another year in college, than going to the NFL and getting what is going to be likely his slot in the 7th round, Seth, is $4.3 million over 4 years, as opposed to another year of $4 million, where I guess more importantly, now that he's gone in the 7th round, he would have a chance to maybe dispel or at least combat some of the negatives against his game.
I don't know if Quinn Ewers is the best guy to use in this example, because where was the place he was going to transfer where he would have a better chance to showcase his talents or what have you than Texas with Matthew Golden and Isaiah Bond and everything else? And like, he did what he did. I don't know where the upside is, unless he gets actually genuinely better as a quarterback, which he does need to do. That I don't know if he's the, should he have taken the $4 million just strictly financially? Probably. Because he wasn't going to get drafted any worse next year.
Right.
So if you just pull out and decide to go back, which you're allowed to do now, by the way, everybody, you can pull out even after you've entered the draft and go back to college. If midway through the 6th round, he should have pulled himself out of the draft.
I don't know
if you can pull. Well, Florio said that Shedeur Sanders could have re-entered college football, but I think it's if you don't get drafted.
I don't know. I think it's when, because the articles I saw, not to go too far down this road, the articles that I saw would all said somebody is going to challenge that rule someday. Like some guy who doesn't get drafted is going to challenge that. I don't know if I don't know if you can. Either way, Quinn Ewers isn't. He's going to go play. He's drafted by the Dolphins. Should, he's going to go play.
He should have. If he had known in advance that he was going to get drafted in the 7th round, then sure, he should have stayed in college another year, and especially financially, taking the $4 million somewhere.
The counterpoints that were made in an article that I saw about this were interesting. About Ewers specifically, is that he grew up a UT fan. He's from Texas. Would go, and he's made a lot of money. Quinn Ewers had $1.4 million in the bank at Ohio State. You know what I mean? Like he went through his eligibility in high school a semester early just so he could get to college to get a big NIL deal. So he's already got money in the bank, and the thought might be that playing somewhere else would be anticlimactic for him.
Yeah.
You know, he played at UT.
Yeah, no kidding.
He's
and
got
you're right,
the money.
By the way, it was Florio's argument was that he should challenge the rule that the NCAA has because it violates antitrust.
I don't blame you for thinking it's the other way, because there were so many people on draft coverage this weekend talking about Shedeur on day 3. As if that's something he were allowed to do. Like,
yeah, and people were saying that they had changed the rule, and they hadn't. They had just misread Florio's post. So I apologize for that.
No worries.
Ewers, who, by the way, though, the one thing that came out of that was the funniest joke, and I don't know who said it originally, but I saw it like 20 different times, was Ewers, who was sitting in his father's trophy room with, I would say, at least 88 animal heads on the wall.
Yes.
The entire time. The joke was that Quinn Ewers is killing an animal for every hour he doesn't get drafted. We need to draft him to save the animals.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah. I don't know. I think he probably to go somewhere else and to play in college where you're not going to have the same level, almost definitely, depending on what his options were, the same experience that he had at Texas right now, I totally get why he entered the draft.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, if he'd known, if he had a crystal ball and knew he was going in the 7th round, would he have gone back? Maybe not. You know, maybe, Miami's not for a 7th round pick, Miami's not the worst landing spot in the world. You know, like Tua could be one of these guys that in 2 years is just viewed as a bloated, overpaid contract, and they're looking for a new solution. You know,
he could get a couple more concussions and decide to retire from football.
More, even more likely to happen. That's a great point. Yeah. Yes, that's probably more likely to happen. So I do wonder. I mean, we're talking specifically about your situation. I do wonder if just the for guys who know that they're going to go, like Quinn Ewers had no idea he was going to go in the seventh round. He thought he'd be gone by the third round at the worst, probably. But there are guys who do declare for the draft that have a better understanding of where they might go in the draft that may now look at this and go, I'll just go make $4 million for another year somewhere else.
100%.
Yeah.
And there's multiple reasons for this, but there are fewer underclassmen entering the draft now than there had been in the previous few years. For a long time, it was just getting more and more and more in every year.
Yeah.
The trend the last few years is for it to be smaller. And you got to think that, the average, I think an average offensive lineman starter at a big school now is making over $200,000.
It's a couple hundred grand.
NIL
it
money.
Is. Yeah.
So when you start talking about the guys who are NFL draft eligible, they're making a lot more. It's not just the quarterback position. It's even the non-glory positions. It makes more sense. And then Caserio talked about it this weekend in one of his press conferences that, man, you see the value of just simply getting better as a football player, playing more football. It's not always a matter of just putting your best foot forward. It's like, no, you improve as a football player. Teams feel better about you the more film they have on you. You look at Jaden Higgins, and he had a lot of college football playing experience, and you can watch and see the growth and the transformation over several years, which is also evidence of the work you've put into it. They feel a lot better about that sometimes than just some guy that had one really good year and you don't know whether it was a flash in the pan or just that he's genuinely on the upswing.
Yep. So it's an interesting topic. Hey, shifting gears real quick. James Harden has been a topic on the show for the last couple days just because Rocket fans are comparing Jalen Green to James Harden. And you and I have been put in the odd position of taking up for James Harden. Like, hey, settle down. At least, like, Harden had bad elimination games, and he had some noteworthy poor playoff performances.
And but, really, games 5 through 7, especially.
Yeah, like, so later in series.
We haven't had a chance for Jalen Green to go in a game 5 just yet.
Not till tonight, yeah. So we'll see what happens. But James Harden, like, statistically, if you're not emotionally attached and you just ignore exactly which games were bad, these elimination or late in series games, statistically, he's a really good playoff player. He wasn't last night. I'm looking at the numbers. I'm like, maybe we're picking the wrong week to die on the hill for James Harden here.
I'll still die on this hill because he's still better than Jalen Green.
Of course he is.
In the playoffs.
Yeah, he was 11 points last night, 3 of 9 shooting. The Clippers now trail their series with the Nuggets 3-2. And the Clippers were viewed, even though they're a 5 seed, they were viewed coming into the playoffs, Seth, as a very live 5 seed because Kawhi Leonard is healthy and everything else. What a great night last night for James
zero
Harden.
3-pointers and 4 turnovers. And it was just – the biggest one was it was the jogging around the court. My favorite comment I saw was, these are the types of games that the James Harden playoff narrative makes sense. Just jogging around the court, dreaming of Wingstop.
Oh, so they've got the fat narrative going on him now in LA too?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm looking at these quotes. Loser running from accountability, but still can't rise to the occasion. Get him off my team.
Yeah, he didn't meet with the media for the second time after a game, which usually, if a guy is beloved, the fans will stick up for that player not talking to the media to the death. But when he's doing it after games like this, not a good look for him or the team.
Such a loser. Trade his bleep after this season. To where? Like, he's been on every team in the league at this point.
Well, we see this. Each successive fan base thinks, oh, James Harden, awesome. And then all the previous fan bases say, just wait until the playoffs.
Yeah.
Just wait. Just wait until a game 5, 6, or 7.
Best tirade, best diatribe, best rant on James Harden still, I think, is this Brian Damaris from the Mavericks, right? A Mavs announcer?
Yeah, before they played Harden in the playoffs.
So this was Brian Damaris of the Dallas Mavericks railing on James Harden.
You wanted Chris Paul. They brought him in and got rid of him. You were tired of him. They brought in your old friend Russell Westbrook. You want to go to Vegas on off days? They looked away. You wanted the team to stay over so you could go out at night. They changed the schedule, and it didn't work. And you know what? You said, I'm going to break up with my whoopee. Not good enough. I see the bright lights in New York. I want to go there. My old pal, Kevin Durant. It's going to work. The big three. And all after 1 year, you wanted out. You realized, oh my gosh, I took this guy for granted, the guy that believed in me. I went back with Daryl Morey. They traded Ben Simmons for you. How did they pull that off? And you know what? You went there and you got a partner who got the MVP. He won the MVP. And what did you say afterwards? You said, they didn't hand me the reins. You're the point guard. You're holding the reins. And what did you do when you had the reins? You scored 9 points in game 7 against Boston. You blew a 3-2 series lead.
Yeah, that's pretty good right there.
And it was kind of in a nutshell very quickly. And I actually started it up. He had started off saying, you wanted Dwight Howard, they got you Dwight Howard. And that's I feel like that's not exactly a fair picture of how it was then. It wasn't, it was...
Daryl Morey wanted Dwight Howard back.
Yeah. That was always kind of a weird and awkward fit. But yes, the rest of it was a slam dunk, something that James Harden does not do in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Slam dunk, correct.
So just so you know, James Harden, we'll stick up for you against the Jalen Green comps, but we are not going to stick up for you in totality if you're going out and chunking up 11 points in a must-have game 5, all right?
There's something about him late in playoff series where he's gotten to the point. It's the weirdest and strangest thing. He's got to talk to a sports psychologist or something. It's not because he can't physically perform well in the playoffs. He's done plenty of games where he's played very, very well. But then he's also got notable instances like being on the bench for an incredible comeback versus the Clippers, in the playoffs.
Yep.
It's the strangest thing.
Yep.
It's not like... Some of the players that, Clayton Kershaw was just awful in the playoffs in general for a long time, and then he figured it out.
Yep.
But even that wasn't as weird. Clayton Kershaw being awful in the playoffs, despite being awesome in the regular season, wasn't as weird as James Harden only being bad at the end of playoff series.
Yeah, man.
In the playoffs.
Yeah. Because you look at his numbers. His numbers overall are really, really good. My favorite one, three words from a Clippers fan. Where's the shame?
No, that's exactly it. How are you not realizing this is a problem?
He looks
this isn't
unaffected.
Some lazy narrative.
Yep, he looks unaffected by the whole thing. All right, let's circle back to the Astros. Another big win last night. They go for the sweep today. Why Jose Altuve is the most beloved athlete maybe in this city's history? We've got 40 seconds worth of audio that will show you exactly why. We've got that for you coming up next.